Well, we are so excited about this. This really is one of our favorite things. If you came into church here today and you caught wind of this how to be rich thing, you're thinking, oh great, this is another church that's going to try to talk about how to get rich. And it's important to know this is not how to get rich. If you want to know how to get rich, you stay at home, you watch one of those TV preachers, you send them all your money and see how that works out for you. This is around the idea of how to be rich. In other words, some of you maybe know some people who are rich and they're not very good at it. And we just want you to be prepared because our goal is that someday you might find yourself rich. And if you ever find yourself rich, we want you to know how to be good, rich people because we're tired of seeing people who are bad at being rich and we want you to be good at being rich. Plus, we also recognize that somewhere there's a line between not rich and rich. And if we're not careful, we don't know when we've crossed that line. You know, it's not like your boss gives you a paycheck one day and he says, hey, this is the one. This is the check, right? It's going to take you over the line. Congratulations. As of today, you are rich. It's a really hard line to see. It's a really hard line to know when we cross. So consequently, I think that's why sometimes rich people go around and they don't even know that they're rich. I don't know about you, but growing up, my family was not rich. We were not rich when I was growing up. And we knew that. Because our mother would tell us whenever we were around rich people, right? Did your parents ever use like that whispery voice? They're wealthy, right? She used to say this, they have more money than God. Bad theology, but we knew what she meant. And so, you know, there was always somebody in our world, somebody in our circle, somebody in our sphere that was rich, and we knew they were rich, and so we weren't. You know, I remember going up to the lake where we used to go up to Lake Toxaway, and that was a beautiful place to go every summer, and we knew that we weren't rich because we could only afford to rent a house on Lake Toxaway for a couple of weeks, whereas my uncle and his family, they owned a house on Lake Toxaway, right? So we knew that they were rich because they owned a house, but we weren't rich because we only rented a house. I remember being out on the boat one time with my uncle, and he pointed out the home of the guy that developed Lake Toxaway. And he said, now they're rich. And I remember thinking, what are you, right? But that's the kind of the funny thing about rich is it's hard for us to know when we're rich because we very often see people that are richer. This is why if I were to ask right now, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to ask me to raise hands. But if I were to ask you to raise hands, I could say, who in this room is tall? You know? And if you're like 6'4", you're like, I'm tall. It's just, you're tall. Tall people know that they're tall. If you're short, you know that you're short. If I were to say, who's a musician in the room? Musicians would be like, that's me. That's my tribe. I'm a musician, you know? If I were to say, who's artistic? The artistic people would say, I'm artistic. That's who I am. But if I were to say, like, who's rich in the room? Nobody would raise their hand, right? Because none of us are rich. This is this thing. Consequently, nobody's rich. But everybody knows somebody that is. Have you guys discovered that? Nobody's rich. I'm not rich, but I know some people that are rich. And so that's the danger of this, that sometimes we don't know when we are rich. And so I'm going to ask you to do this because I think that this is, there might be someone in this room who's rich. It could be that there's someone in this room who's going to be rich. And we want you to be well prepared for that. So just think for a moment, if you had an opportunity, if you had a microphone, and if you had a platform, and you were going to speak to some rich people, what would you want to say to them? Okay, and I'm going to ask you to turn and share this with somebody that you don't know. So I know it's incredibly awkward, guys, I apologize. But just a good exercise, I want you to think about it for a minute. I want you to think, what would you say if you could communicate one thing to rich people? What would you want them to hear? What would you want them to know? What is one thing that you would want to share with rich people? So go ahead and turn to your neighbor or turn to someone you don't know and tell them what it is you want rich people to know. All right, you guys did great with that. You guys actually jumped in a little more quickly than I thought you would. It's like some of you have been thinking about that for a while, right? And you've thought, this is a great opportunity to really share what I've been thinking about rich people and what I can tell them. Because, you know, there's a difficulty that sometimes rich people just aren't very good at being rich, right? Unfortunately, we've all known someone like that. Your kid was selling like Girl Scout cookies and you're like, oh, I know how we can shortcut this whole thing, right? We get this done in one day. I know this guy, and if we can just get past the gate, if we can get past security and you can get up to his house, you could sell cases of Girl Scout cookies to this guy, right? And you finally got to their house and your little girl went up to the door and he bought like one box. Who buys one box of Girl Scout cookies? Cookies, right? I mean, that's more self-control than anybody in our house has. And they bought one box of Girl Scout cookies. And you thought to yourself, man, if I'm ever rich, I'm going to be a good rich person. And so there's this fascinating thing that in the Bible, there's this author of the Bible named Paul. He wrote about half the New Testament. And Paul had some things to say specifically to rich people. And so he writes a letter to Timothy. Timothy was like his young protege, and Timothy is leading one of the churches, and Paul is kind of instructing him as a young pastor, and Paul actually gives him some specific instructions for rich people, which I think this is kind of fascinating, right? Because you think that everything in the Bible would be for everybody, right? But no, there's actually this passage in the Bible, and it is specifically addressed to rich people. So here's what Paul says to Timothy. He says, command those who are rich in this present world. So in other words, we're going to talk now for a moment about rich people, and we're going to talk specifically to how we should address rich people. And I think this is interesting because God understands, God recognizes that rich people have a unique set of challenges, problems, and difficulties that the rest of us don't face, right? If you know some rich people, you know that they have some challenges that, sometimes maybe it's hard to conjure up some sympathy for their problems, but they're different problems than normal people have, right? So for example, rich people, if you've seen this, rich people actually have to hire other people to help them manage their money. They're called financial planners or financial advisors. And rich people actually have to go out and they have to spend money to hire someone because rich people know that they're actually going to run out of time before they run out of money. And so rich people have to figure out, how am I going to leave this money to my kids? Or how am I going to leave this money to my grandkids, right? Rich people have to figure out how they're going to pass this on. So this is just, it's a challenge that rich people have. Rich people have difficulty with their housing. You know, they've got these very complicated situations with their housing. They've got to manage this. Rich people, I don't know if you've seen this, sometimes rich people have to do major things to their home just to keep it livable. So they'll go into like where there's a kitchen and there'll be countertops and a refrigerator and a microwave and a dishwasher and a stove, right? And they will tear everything out. They'll tear out the countertops. They'll take out the refrigerator. It works. But they'll tear out the refrigerator, the dishwasher, the microwave, the stove, and then they'll put in countertops, a dishwasher, microwave, stove. And have you guys heard of this? It's crazy, right? This is something that rich people do because they just, I guess, keep their house livable. And then the whole time that their kitchen's under construction, right, they're miserable. And they're telling everybody that'll listen all about their house is under construction and how it's such a pain and how they have to use their outdoor kitchen by the pool because the indoor kitchen isn't available to them. I mean, these are the things that rich people have to deal with. Rich people, you know, they've got to be aware of kind of what's going on around. Well, first of all, rich people, you know, they have so many clothes. I know I'm getting really sensitive ground now, but they have so many clothes that they actually, when they buy new clothes, sometimes they can't fit their new clothes into their closet, so they have to bag up all their old clothes, and they have to give their old clothes away to make room for their new clothes. Have you heard about this? I mean, rich people, you might even be, maybe you've heard of this, you can even finish this sentence for me, but rich people will sometimes stand outside their closet and look in to their closets, and they will say, I don't have, yeah, you've heard of this. You've seen this, right? In fact, sometimes rich women will, they'll stand in front of that same closet And they'll count like, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 pairs of shoes. And they'll think they need, I don't know, how many pairs of shoes can you wear? But these are the problems that rich people have, right? Now, meanwhile, while the rich woman is standing in front of her closet, the rich guy is standing outside in this other house that they built. They have a house that they live in, but then rich people, they build another little house for their cars. Their cars live in a little house that they built for their cars. And so the husband is standing out there in the garage, and he's trying to figure out what they're going to do about trading in their car that works for because he drove his friend's car that was new, and he realized that my old car doesn't work as well as my friend's new car, and so I need to figure out how to trade. These are the problems that rich people, are you guys feeling any sympathy right now for rich people? Any empathy at all? See, it's difficult to know when we cross this line, right? But Paul says that we've got to command those who are rich in this present world. But the challenge, if none of us are aware that we're rich, if none of us know that we're rich, the challenge for this passage is that it might go unread, or we might not pay attention to it because we might just skip past this passage of scripture and think, well, that's just for rich people. And since I'm not rich, then I just kind of skip to the next paragraph. So that we don't do that today, we're going to just ask the question, who is rich? Who's rich? What does it really mean to be rich? Now, I recognize that that this is going to be like kind of unbelievable to hear, but I want you to just get ready to celebrate here for a second. If your household income is north of $45,000 a year, if your household income is north of $45,000 a year, then you are in the top 1% of wage earners in the world. In the world. That's exactly the response I knew I was going to get. Nobody like stood up and cheered like, woohoo, we're rich, right? None of you are like, I love this church. I can't wait. I'm going to go tell you got to come to my church, man. I went to church this morning and I found out I'm rich. None of you responded that way. None of you cheered that way. Why? Because you don't feel rich, right? But congratulations, you're rich. Now, the reason we don't feel rich is that because as our income goes up, and most of us in this room are old enough that we have seen that happen through our careers, as our income goes up, so do our needs, so do our wants, so do our tastes, so do our desires. It's time to upgrade, it's time to expand, it's time to grow a little bit. And so we have this tendency where we push our expenses right up against our income, and so we never feel margin. We never feel rich, because really, at the end of the day, that feeling of margin is that thing that makes us say, you know, I think I feel rich. I remember my first job right out of college. I earned $19,000 a year, my first job out of college. But my rent, my share of the rent anyway, was $200 a month. And my car was paid for and my motorcycle was paid for. And what else did I really need in life, right? So I literally put half of my paycheck in the savings account every month. I was earning $19,000 a year and I was living on less than half of my income. Now, I can't imagine doing that today. And, you know, we blame it on the kids and we blame it on a lot of other things, right? About why our expenses have gone up. You know, I've got high school students, I've got college students, it's expensive. But the reality is that we begin to push our lifestyle just as fast, if not faster, than our income. And none of us in this room feel rich. But did you know if your household income is $200,000 a year or more, you're in the top 5% of the top 1% of wage earners in the world. You're not just in the 1%. You're in the top 5% of the top 1% in the world. And so at some point, we've got to step back and recognize that we maybe have crossed that line and didn't know it. Maybe if you're like me, you were even born into a family that had already crossed that line, but you didn't know it. And because your parents would have never, ever said that they were rich, you didn't grow up realizing or recognizing that you were rich. And so I want us to just embrace the fact this morning that most of us in this room are rich. Now, I recognize that there are, we're all in here, we're different stories and different backgrounds, and some of us, you might be in a different season right now. You might be in a season where you've recently lost your job, or you're in a season of transition, and we, many of us, have been in these painful seasons where we are feeling financial strain in a big way. And I'm not trying to make light of your current circumstances. Please don't hear that at all. But most of us today are doing okay. And I want us to embrace that, and I want us to feel the freedom to say that we're rich. Now, Andy mentioned that we started this about 10 years ago in our family of churches, and my kids were, at the time, my oldest kid was 9, and I remember backing out of the driveway one Sunday morning. We were it was the first time that we had talked about this idea of being rich at church, and my son asked me as we're backing out of the driveway, he said, "Dad, are we rich?" And if your kids ever asked you that, and what's your like gut reaction? Like, you don't even think about the reaction. No, no, we're not rich, right? The last thing you want is your kid going to school and be like, my dad says we're rich. And I thought, and as we're backing out of the driveway on Sunday morning, if you work for JEA, that's my day that I'm allowed to water my lawn. My sprinklers were going off as we're backing out of the driveway. And I watched as we're taking perfectly clean drinking water and spraying it all over the ground. Water that in many parts of the world, people would hike for miles to get water like that, to be able to drink for their family. And as I saw this drinking water just spraying all over the ground, I said to my son, "Yeah, we're rich." And then you go ahead and tell your friends. Tell them all. Go to school. Say, "Hey, we're rich." Because we're rich. So I know this can be a little bit of a stretch. You may not feel this yet. You may not believe this yet, but I want us all to kind of get here together. And so I'm going to ask you to say this sentence with me, okay? We're doing a little bit of participation here this morning. I know this is a little bit of a stretch for us, but I want you to say this sentence with me, all right? Go ahead and put the sentence up on the screen. It's, "I have more than I need. I'm rich." Okay, let's all say it together. "I have more than I need. I'm rich." Oh, that's painful, isn't it? It's a hard thing to get to. We actually talk about it in our family this way. We every evening when we gather for dinner, we say a prayer. And sometimes that prayer is long, and sometimes that prayer is short. And the short version of that prayer is simply this: "God, thank you for giving us everything we need and even some of our wants. Thank you for giving us everything we need and even some of our wants." And so I want you to say kind of this version of that sentence with me, if you will, okay? It goes like this: "God has given us, or God has given me all that I need and even some of my wants. I'm rich." Everybody say that together. "God has given me all that I need and even some of my wants. I'm rich." Yeah. Now, maybe that's a struggle for you. Maybe you're here today and you're not even sure you believe in God, and I'm so glad that you're here today. But whatever you would put at the beginning of that sentence, whether that's God or whether that's a higher power or whether you're not really sure, I would say that what you have been given, what you have been blessed with, is a gift. It's a gift. Now you say, "Well, I worked hard for it." Yes, I'm sure you did. My grandmother worked harder than you. I don't even know what you do for a living, but I know that my grandmother, when my grandfather died in the middle of the Great Depression, and my grandmother was a single mom with 7 young children, and her oldest son at the age of 10 started farming to take care of his little sisters and his little brother. When they sold eggs and they rented out one of the 3 bedrooms in their house, remember, 7 kids, my grandmother worked hard, and she was never rich a day in her life. The reality is that most of us in this room can point to events or circumstances beyond our control. Did your smartness intersect? Did your hard work intersect with that good fortune? Absolutely. But at some point, we have to recognize that what I have is a result of God's blessing in my life. And so Paul says this to Timothy for the rich people. He says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant. How did he know? Not to be arrogant, right? Because here's a danger that Timothy and Paul are pointing out to those of us who might someday be rich, that when you become rich, you might think it has more to do with you than being a gift. It might be more to do with you. We might identify ourselves. We might wrap our identity up in what we have or what's in the bank. And we might have a difficult time separating those things. And so God says, first of all, warn them, don't be arrogant. In other words, you've been around some rich people, right? Maybe you've walked into a circle of conversation and there's one rich person in the circle. And have you ever stood there and you've kind of noticed that his jokes are just a little bit funnier than everybody else's? And his comments are just a little bit more insightful and a little bit wiser than anyone else's. And so this is the part of the problem. If you're a rich person, people around you will sometimes reinforce this idea that you're funnier than you are, that you're smarter than you are. And so we begin to get an inflated view of ourselves and we begin to think, this is me. This is me that made this happen. And God's saying, first of all, don't be arrogant. Because it's so important that you be good rich people. Because there's some people that are good at it and some people that are just not good at it. So being rich is not the same thing as being good at it. And our goal with this Be Rich campaign is that we want you to be good at it. If you're rich now, if you're rich someday in the future, we want you to be good at it. So he goes on and he says this, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant or to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. Now, this is an easy thing for rich people to do. An easy thing for rich people to do is to begin to kind of put aside a little money for a rainy day and then put aside a little bit more money for a rainy day and begin to think that they can build. Actually, the author of Proverbs talked about this as an imaginary wall that the wealthy try to build. In other words, we think that we can build a fortress. We think that we can protect ourselves, defend ourselves, hedge off any future trouble or pain if we just build up a big enough pile of cash. And then we can protect ourselves. We can defend ourselves. But it's just imaginary. It's not real. In fact, I remember when we were launching this organization years ago, there was a nonprofit that I had become aware of, and they had an endowment, millions of dollars in an endowment. And the operating funds for this nonprofit just were paid out of the interest off of this endowment every year. And I remember thinking, that would be amazing. We were in a season at Access Church where we literally weren't sure if we were going to get paid from month to month. And there were some months that we didn't get paid. And I remember thinking, wow, an endowment for your nonprofit and all of your operational costs are paid out of the endowment. That would be phenomenal. And that endowment was invested with a guy named Bernie Madoff. And in one day, that nonprofit closed its doors. Don't put your hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. We just don't know. It's so easy to look at somebody else. It's so easy to think they've got enough padding, they've got enough security, they're okay. You know how we define rich in our country? Gallup has done a survey. They surveyed people that make $30,000 a year, and they said, define rich. People that make $30,000 a year define rich as people that make $74,000 a year or more. That's rich. Now, I guarantee you, if you make $74,000 a year, you do not feel rich, do you? But there's a population that believes you are. The interesting thing is, so then Gallup came back around. They surveyed all the people that make $75,000 a year, and they said, define rich. People who make $75,000 a year, on average, they put down the number $150,000 a year in income. If I can make $150,000 a year in income, then I would be rich. And on it went, with roughly 2 or 2.5 times my current income, that's rich. Money Magazine did a survey of its readers who on average have $2.5 million in liquid assets and said, define rich. And they said $5 million in liquid assets. That would spin off, you know, enough interest for me. I would be okay. I would be protected. I would have a wall between me and hardship. And I don't know, but I just kind of guess that if you went to the people that had $5 million in liquid assets and asked them if they were rich, they would say, no, no. But I know a guy, and he's rich. And we have a tendency as rich people to put our hope in wealth. And he says, don't do that. Here's some of you guys have experienced this. You've gone to third world countries. I remember the first time I went to Mexico and worshiped with a church in Mexico, and I was absolutely blown away by the happiness and the joy and the expression of worship in this church. And these people did not have anything. And that's because poor people understand something that it's difficult for rich people to understand. Poor people know that wealth is a poor source of hope. It's a poor source of hope. And if you've been around people who have so little and you wonder how they can be so full of joy, it's because they're not worrying about how much they're saving up. This is just not even a possibility for them. It's not even a potential reality for them. And so they don't put their hope in wealth. Command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, nor to put their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God. To put their hope in God, who so richly provides. God who gives, God who provides, put your hope in God. So that's the command for us today. That's the command for those of us here. Why would we hope in riches when we can hope in the one who richly provides? Don't put your hope in the gift, put your hope in the giver. And so we're gonna say another sentence together. Go ahead and skip forward, Kevin. We're behind one. All right, so to put our hope in God who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. For our enjoyment. Now this, I want you to just pause here for a moment and let this soak in. God richly provides. What you have is not an accident. God has given it to you. God has allowed you to be rich. In fact, a step further, God wants you to be rich. If you're rich, it's not because you've been selfish or greedy. It's because God wants you to be rich. You recognize, right, that you could want to be rich all the time. You could be selfish and greedy and never actually get rich. There are selfish, greedy people who haven't gotten rich. If you're rich, it's not because you're selfish and greedy. Now, you might be selfish and greedy. But that's not why you're rich. You're rich because God has richly blessed you for our enjoyment. Has it ever crossed your mind that maybe God's okay with you being rich? Maybe God wants you to be rich? Maybe God wants you to enjoy your wealth? You see, for so long, so many people have tried to make you feel guilty about this or beat you up about this, and you think, oh, if I come to church and they talk about us being rich, they're gonna make me feel guilty. I promise you, my goal this morning is not to make you feel guilty. Guilt accomplishes nothing. People don't make lasting change in their life or the lives of the people they love because they feel guilty. Guilt won't get us anywhere. And God doesn't want you to feel guilty. God did this. God has given you your wealth for your enjoyment. So stop feeling guilty. Don't feel guilty. Instead, feel grateful. Feel grateful. Don't feel guilty. Feel grateful. Because gratitude will change us. Gratitude will change our attitude. It'll change how enjoyable we are to be around. It'll change the way that we love the people closest to us. Gratitude will change the way that we serve in our community, the way that we love in our community, the way that we behave toward our neighbors, toward our family members, toward our extended family. Gratitude will change us from the inside out, and gratitude will impact our community. And so the change and the impact that we want to make in our community, it has nothing to do with guilt. And it has everything to do with gratitude. We believe that gratitude will help us be good, rich people. So we're going to keep going. Command those who are rich in this present world to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. And that phrase right there, be rich in good deeds, that's where we pull the title of this campaign. We want to be rich. Most of us have already crossed the line. We are firmly planted in the territory of the wealthy. And now, the question that we have to ask is, are we gonna, because of gratitude, and through gratitude, are we going to be generous? Are we going to be good, rich people? Because that's what God wants for you. That's all he's saying in this. He's just saying, hey, be good, rich people. And we believe that generosity is the antidote to greed. Greed is that thing that creeps up in us. Greed is that thing that says, I want a little bit more. Greed is the appetite. And you know what happens to an appetite when you feed it? It grows. Right? Every appetite in your life, when you feed the appetite, it grows. Greed is that thing in us that says, I want just a little bit more. I want just a little bit more. Greed is that thing in us that says that everything that God gives me must be for my consumption. And generosity is that thing that says, no. Generosity is that thing that says, when God gives me something, that's a tool that I can use. That's a tool that I can manage for the sake of those who are less powerful. Generosity is the antidote to greed. And so we want to be incredibly generous to our community. From the gratitude that we have for all that God has given us, we want to be generous to our community. We want the community to see the church doing good in our community. We just feel like if over the years, if over the decades or the centuries, the church had been known for generosity instead of some of the other things that the church has unfortunately been known for, that we would have much better opportunity to make a difference in our culture. In fact, if we have to choose, and I'm not saying that we often do, but if we have to choose between people knowing us for our theology or knowing us for our generosity, we would rather they know us for our generosity. Because we believe that that demonstrates the heart of who God is. And we want our community to know that God loves them, that God is for them. And so we want to say in the strongest possible ways, we love you and we are for you. And this is an incredibly tangible way for us to do this. So around here, our shorthand for all of this is be rich. And we sum it up in these ways: give, serve, and love. We want to give more, we want to serve more, and we want to love more in our community. Give, serve, and love. And so we're gonna ask you to join with us. We're going to ask you to help us love people. We're going to ask you to help us help people who can't help themselves. And we're going to ask you to do it with your time. We're going to ask you to do it with your money. And we're going to ask you to do it with your love. But here's the promise that we make in all of this, that none of this benefits this organization. What we do through this campaign is to benefit other organizations in this city who are already doing great things. And we come alongside them and we partner with them. And 100% of what you give through this campaign goes outside these walls. It is completely book kept separately, and every single penny of it is distributed. Every single penny. If you use a credit card today to give toward the Be Rich campaign, we are charged a transaction fee. Right? A merchant fee by the credit card company. We don't even take that out. The full amount that you put down is the full amount that we give out. We absorb any fees that are involved with this because we want you to know every single penny goes outside the walls of this church into our community. Let me finish up with this. The end of this verse. Command those who are rich in this present world to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. In other words, to live like this, to live from a place of generosity, is to really live, is to really take hold of life. And so we're going to introduce a few opportunities for you this morning. The first one is an organization that we have supported the last few years called the Foster Closet. We love the Foster Closet. First of all, you'll notice a theme in the organizations that we support. We try to take care of basic needs for people, housing, food, clothing, but we especially lean into those organizations that are helping children. We love children, and we want to give them the best possible opportunities, and so we're going to lean into organizations that help with children. We think fostering is one of the single best things that we can do to show love in our community, and so we want to support families that foster. Foster Closet is an organization that comes alongside foster families and helps to resource them. They give them everything from car seats and cribs to clothing for families that have decided that they want to foster, and we love John and Tammy McGuire, who lead Foster Closet and that organization. And so we are going to give some of the money that you give today to the Foster Closet. We also still are aware of a number of families in this area that are struggling to recover from Hurricane Irma. And so we want to serve these families in a big way. We're going to do this in two ways. One, we're going to do this financially. So we're going to take a portion of the money that you give today, and we're going to direct this to those families, whether that is maybe they need a new roof for their home, maybe they need new appliances, their house was flooded, they need new flooring and carpet and drywall. We want to take care of the needs of restoring their homes back to the condition they were in before Hurricane Irma. So we want to help in some really practical ways, and you guys know, because you've done it, that replacing your appliances, it's expensive, right? So we want to help in some really tangible, concrete ways for families that have been hit hard from Hurricane Irma. And we're going to do that both with our time and our money. So we're going to take some of your money and direct it toward that. And we're also going to ask you to join us next Sunday. We don't have Sunday services next Sunday, but we want to ask you to join us next Sunday and serve together. So we just thought it'd be really cool if we all got together next Sunday. We're not having church, so I know you got the morning free. We all get together on Sunday morning, bring your kids. I think it's fantastic when your kids watch you serve, and we're going to find ways for you to serve in this community, specifically helping those who are hit hard by Hurricane Irma. So two ways that we're going to help Irma victims. And then finally, there's a fantastic ministry called 6-8 Ministries that we have really come to love over the last couple of years. We've taken a couple of trips down there. There's a group of 15 that went down this last summer. They work in Costa Rica. Zach is here this morning. Zach has served as an intern at 6-8 Ministries. We love 6-8 Ministries, and they're doing a Christmas party, and we are going to provide Christmas presents for all the kids that are at this Christmas party in Costa Rica. We would love to tell you more about what 6-8 does, but it's kind of a favorite thing of ours, so I could go on for a long time. But they love the least of these in the barrios of San Jose, Costa Rica. And it's a fantastic organization, fantastic ministry. And so we want to help support 6-8 Ministries. So here's what I'm asking from you today. That you would just jump in and you would participate. That you would jump in and that you would be a part of this. Because I believe that generosity is the antidote to greed. I believe it's what heads off greed in our hearts and in our lives. And I also think it's like a muscle that needs to be exercised. And sometimes you just have to stretch it a little bit. You have to work it a little bit. And so today, I would love for all of us, and whether you believe in God or not, whether you go to this church or not, it's okay, because not one penny of this money is staying here. This is going to organizations in our community to love them well. So we're asking for 100% of you to give, and we're going to give 100% of it away, all right? One, we just thought it'd be fun to kind of throw a number out there for you. And so we would love for each adult in your household to consider giving $39.95. Okay, this is a number that we're doing all across all of our churches, $39.95. There's no shipping or handling on that. We cover all the expenses. Now, if you, you know, I want to recognize for some of you in this room right now, $39.95 just isn't happening. It's not in the budget. If you're a college student, you don't have $39.95. If you're going through a difficult season financially, you don't have $39.95. And it's no joke. It's no laughing matter. And we want you to know you adjust that down. You do whatever you can do. But we want you to give something because we think that it's a muscle that needs to be stretched and exercised. If you laughed at $39.95 and you think, oh, really? I was like getting ready for him to like ask us all for, you know, thousands of dollars. Then maybe you need to add a zero or two or three. I don't know who's in this room, but we want to be generous in an incredible way. And this is easy for me to ask because Stephanie and I are doing this and we're not going to ever ask you to do anything that we have not already done. And so we're leading the way on this. Our staff is doing this. Our elders are doing this. We're asking you guys to jump in and to be a part of this because we want to make a difference in our community. And I'm not asking you for money for me or for this organization. I'm asking for you to help us make a difference in this community. Here's the really cool thing, okay? We all do this together. We may really surprise ourselves with what we can accomplish. We've had some years in the past where it has been just mind-blowing what a little tiny church has been able to do for our community. And we want to do that again. And the really cool thing is, I know some of you are already generous, and you already give to nonprofits in this community, but here's the really great thing about when you do it as part of a group like this. When you do it as a part of a group like this, you still get credit in heaven, okay? It's okay, you still get credit in heaven, but the church gets credit in the community. And that has been lacking in our culture. The church has not been seen enough for its generosity. And we want to be known for our generosity. So help us with that. This is an opportunity not for your family foundation to show up on a plaque somewhere, but for a local church to be known for its generosity. So on your way out today, there's three ways that you can respond, all right? And we'll let you go. The first one is that you can fill out a card that you got on the way in and say that you want to serve next Sunday. Just tell us how many people, how many hours, and we would love to have you serve with us next Sunday. It's important that you drop off those cards to us today so that we know how to plan for how many people that we're going to have show up and serve. We want to make good use of your time. We want to make sure that you've got jobs to do, tools to do it with. And so let us know if you're planning to serve. If you're planning to serve some other way, if you've got some other idea that you want to do to serve in our community, hey, we'll take that. We would love to have you exercise your creativity. Write on there what you're going to do and how you're going to serve. But let us know how you're serving. That's the first thing. Secondly, out in the hall, there are two tables with colored balloons. Green balloons are if you want to give cash or a check. You can write the check out to Access Church. If you really don't trust us, write it out to Be Rich. But you can write those checks out. You can give cash at the table with green balloons, at the table with white balloons. Actually, there's not tables, it's iPad stands, and you can swipe your cards or you can use Apple Pay or whatever Android people use. And you can, I just totally gave away how rich I am, didn't I? Yes, I think it's completely reasonable to pay $800 for a phone. So you can use Apple Pay, you can use Android Pay, you can swipe your cards. Look, we want to make it as easy as possible for you to be generous this morning. And so that's how we're going to do that. And we are so grateful that you would even entertain this idea of helping us to be rich. Let me pray. God, thank you so much for the people in this room who respond to a message like this with smiles and laughter and not to getting defensive and protective. God, thank you for reminding us through these words from Paul and Timothy that that we are given everything that we have to manage by you. And that our best response is to be generous. So thank you so much for this reminder. Help us to do this well in our community today. Amen.